Good morning, members. I'd like to call the meeting of the Environment Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. Appreciate your patience waiting. We do have some members in different committees this morning. First item on the agenda is the minutes from March 23rd, 2017. Representative Hoppe moves those minutes. All those in favor of the minutes as presented, please signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. Members, we're going to be taking action on House File 888 as amended this morning. But before we do that, I need to express some thanks and stuff. I'm not sure how many meetings we're going to have after today. But I do want to say thank you to our pages, Adam and Annika. They have been terrific in a lot more ways than just having coffee here for us in the morning. These two are very, very dedicated to what they do, and I appreciate what they do to help the other people sitting on either side of me here do our job, and thank you very much. I appreciate what you do. I also want to say thank you to Ms. Taylor and Mr. Hagemeyer. These two people are geniuses at what they do. Without them, I'm still not sure I understand spreadsheets, but I'm getting closer. And all the technical stuff that goes on behind the scenes, I wish that when I was a vice chair, I probably would have paid a little bit more attention to what was going on. But I am learning, and I'm very thankful to both of you, so thank you. And I'd also be remiss if I didn't. I'd also be, what's that?
That's a bit of advice. Pay attention.
I have a way of stepping in it once in a while. And, of course, Amy Zipko is incredible in what she does. I walk into her office, and every once in a while she's got this little red toy, and so you've seen it, and it says, no, 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 in about 15 different tones and so forth. And then Kaylin Schroeder, our committee legislative assistant, without her, I would be lost in what I'm doing in terms of my schedule and so forth. So thank you to both of you. And to all of you members, I appreciate the work that you do. I know that sometimes we disagree, and sometimes we agree. But in the end, we are sent here to do a job, and I respect what you do and how you go about your business. So thank you to all of you. And to the people sitting in the audience, I know, too, that you have a job to do, and you have concerns and so forth, and I respect those and your opinions and the positions that you take. And I look forward to being able to continue working in a positive way with all of you as well. My door is almost always open. So. Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I would just like to also say that I think this committee is a little different than some committees here in the House. It's very collegial. We have good people on both sides of the aisle, and I think we're all working together for the same thing. And I certainly do appreciate all the friends and colleagues we have here on both sides of the table.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, I'd also like to thank all the folks you thank, but also recognize Peter Strohmeyer. I'm not sure when Peter goes home. There may be a fold-out bed in his office, but he does awesome work for the people of Minnesota as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So, and then the last thing I wanted to mention this morning is I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old grandson and a granddaughter that are waiting for Grandpa Dan to pick them up in Elk River and take them up to Roseville this afternoon. So, and ride around on the ATVs and just have some fun kicking a soccer ball around or a hockey puck. So, let's get out of here. All right. So, with that, Representative Hornstein, I'm sorry.
I know, just very quickly. There's a former legislator here that we don't see very often, and so I just wanted to give a shout-out to former Representative Marcia Swales from Woodbury. She was my seatmate for a term, and you know, I just wanted to say hello. So,
welcome. Okay. So I'd like to move House File 888 as amended to bring it back before the committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so we have the bill back before us. And with that, I would like to move the A18 amendment. This is a Ms. Taylor amendment. It's a technical amendment. So, you know, they It's amazing. They do make some mistakes once in a great while, but what's amazing to me is they catch them. So, Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to go through the A18 amendment. It does a number of things, and I'll just go through it quickly here. Line 1.3 just makes a technical change on how the transfer from the environmental fund to the general fund works. Lines 1.4 through 1.7 adds a rider. If you remember when Mr. Hagemeyer was going through the spreadsheet, there was a conservation easement stewardship money that was in there. This would just make sure that that's clarified, that that money would be used for that. Line 1.8 through 1.16 is another rider. This is to pay for the Representative Neuberger bill language that we're carrying, requiring economic analysis for water appropriation permits. Lines 1.17 through 1.24 add the forest management investment account to specify that's where the funds are coming from to a number of forestry riders that are in the bill. And that's to reflect what was in the spreadsheet already. Lines 2.1 through 2.3, this just makes a provision that cancels the Lake Coronas AIS appropriation effective upon enactment, so it's canceled in time before it would cancel back to the fund. Lines 2.4 through 2.6 clarifies a rider pertaining to the Section 404 permit assumption. Lines 2.7 and 2.8 fix a rider to clarify that it's for conservation easement stewardship like you saw earlier. Let's see. And 2.9 is also part of that. 2.10 and 2.13, this makes some clarifications to the unadopted rules for the DNR, and you'll see similar language later on in the amendment that does the same thing for PCA. Lines 2.15 through 2.25 make some changes to the contested case hearing provisions. 2.26 and through the end of that page, and then moving on to line 3.23, this adds a section that was intended to be in the bill that this dealt with the wolf management account and having 50 cents from the deer licenses go into that was intended to be in the bill, was just inadvertently left out. Lines 3.24 and 3.28 are the unadopted rules changes for the PCA. Line 3.29 would make there's a provision in the bill that is amending old language to make it permissive for rules to be adopted. This would also make the PCA requirement to adopt emission rules for related to silica sand permissive rather than a requirement as it was originally passed. And that's about it.
Thank you. And for members who think maybe their stuff gets left out of the bill on purpose, the wolf stuff, that was the chair's bill, so they got left out accidentally. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, it appears much of this is technical, but I'm concerned about the 3.29, and I would like to hear the Pollution Control Agency's opinion on that, making the silica sand rules instead of shall into a may. Often one-word changes are quite significant, so I don't know if somebody is here from PCA to comment on that, and maybe while they're getting ready, I'd also like the DNR to comment on their provisions in this technical amendment.
Good morning, Ms. Gauthier.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, the amendment in the language in the A19 amendment goes to page 98, line 25 of the bill. And so the language in this section, section 114, later down on page 99, changes on line 3 at page 99, changes the shall to may. So first of all, this is not our language, but it looks to me like it is doing the same thing on page 98.25, changing the shall to may. So I'm not sure, I don't believe that it changes the implications of the language that was already there, but rather seems to reinforce it. So we would still oppose it, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hansen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so really what this is doing is paralleling the language in this provision in Section 105, which I think that Section 105 was a bill that wasn't heard. It's another one of the magical provisions that appeared. Is that right? This wasn't a bill that was heard.
I don't believe it was, no. And obviously it was posted as the amendment, a couple of days ago. And, this was put into law, I believe, was it 3 or 4 years ago to have them do that. And to the best of my knowledge, they haven't completed that yet. So not to draw too stark conclusions, but it doesn't seem to be a real high priority within the agency. So maybe just bringing this to some people's attention might speed up the process. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, well, I know because I put it in law, and I think on a bipartisan basis sent a letter to the Pollution Control Agency about this, and I think it would be good for the PCA to publish the rules, because then the rulemaking process could continue. I'm a little concerned about moving the shall to May so that the rules would never be done. I have some concerns about this in general. I realize that the amendment is just clarifying that section, but I think when we have provisions that just appear, it is kind of there may be some consequences to this that we don't want. So,
thank you. And this is permissive language. There's nothing in here that's saying that they shall not or may not. It's just turning it to me. And the same stuff that's in the bill. excuse me. So, any other further discussion to the A18? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Next, I believe the A11 amendment, Representative Eklund, I believe has that. Representative Eklund, your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment was brought to me by some houseboat operations in regards to the Sophie's Law that was passed in session last year, and there's some concern among the houseboat groups about cost and interpreting the bill, and also whether there's even any whether the product that's required will even be available in time for use this summer. And so that's why I brought this amendment. And Mr. Chair, I've had some discussions with you and with Representative Hertas, and if we're willing to work together to try to fix this for the houseboat associations, I would be willing to withdraw the amendment.
Okay. Representative Eklund, yes, I'm happy to work with you on this. I'm very willing to. I've also talked to Mr. Meyer at DNR. I do want to make sure that whatever position we're putting people in, no matter which side of this issue they're on, we need to make sure that it's something that actually does work and accomplishes what it's intended to accomplish.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have had pretty long discussions with the DNR also on safety on this, and they were ready to talk about it. But if we can move forward and try to work on this to fix the houseboat issue, I will withdraw the A11 amendment.
Yep, we'll do that. Next, we have the A7 amendment. I'm not sure whose amendment this is. Okay, Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is an amendment that would pull out the provision relating to the Clean Air Act settlement requirement. And we talked about this yesterday. It's the Volkswagen settlement funds. So just to kind of rehash what my concerns are, essentially I'm worried that we're going to risk the state of Minnesota losing access to the $47 million by including this provision. I don't know if anyone else here has read through the mitigation trust agreement documents. They're quite lengthy, so I would guess that most members have not. Essentially, what I'm concerned about is that, and we talked about this yesterday with the folks that were here, and all, the MPCA was concerned as well. In order to get the funds, the state of Minnesota needs to identify a lead agency. The way that this privately agreed upon court document is laid out, the way the settlement is laid out, is that the executive branch designates who that agency is, and in this case it's the MPCA, and then the MPCA would have to be certified in order to actually have access to try to get the funds. And in order to be certified, they need to have the ability to use the funds as they're given to the MPCA without strings, as far as I'll have to find the exact information or the exact language. They couldn't be bound by anything else. And in the way that, and we talked about when the trust effective date is, that date has not been set yet. If you happen to have looked at the mitigation documents, each entity that fails to timely file such certifications shall be an excluded entity and shall be permanently enjoined from asserting any rights. And so what I fear is that by leaving this in, whenever that trust effective date happens, we're going to have 60 days to get this properly certified and through in order to have access to that $47 million that's supposed to be coming to Minnesota. And if we say that the legislature is going to have control over all of that, that's going to slow things down, and it really is putting those funds at risk. And once you lose that 60-day window, I mean, that language is really clear that you're permanently enjoying from, you know, you don't get to appeal and try to ask for the money back. It gets given out to other states. So you're correct in that Volkswagen is still going to pay the full amount, but that money is going to go to other states. And in fact, other states have actually passed legislation and worked on legislation to make it clear that their agencies have the full ability to designate those funds so that they aren't risking losing it. And I asked questions of the MPCA yesterday. To my knowledge, I'm not sure on the Senate side, but I know here on the House side, the only person that thinks this is a good idea is Representative Garofalo. We haven't had, you know, there were no testifiers here. If you ask any attorney who's looked at this language, you know, they have the same concerns that I do. You know, I know we can frame it as a bill with bipartisan support, but I think it's a bill with, you know, two guys who have this idea. One of them happens to be over here and one in the Senate. I just really don't want to see us lose access to these funds by playing some games with a private settlement that's a finalized thing. So that's what the amendment does, and that's why I brought it forward, and those are my concerns. I'm happy to answer questions if other people have questions about it.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak strongly in favor of the A7 amendment. I think we had compelling testimony several times from the PCA that this is very risky, and as Representative Becker Finn said, you know, there's a chance we could lose this money. $47 million is not a minor matter, and so I'd rather not risk this. I also wanted to highlight that I believe the PCA did say that it's not as if the legislature is completely walled off from this. I think they're interested in having some dialogue and discussions with us about it, but to put something like this in law and potentially risk this $47 million and have it go to other states, it's just not worth it. So I think the prudent thing to do would be to delete this from the bill.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, this is a very important issue, $47 million coming to Minnesotans as a result of the fraud from Volkswagen. We'd like a roll call on this.
Sure. Representative Sundin.
Just a question to the author of the amendment. The $47 million we're talking about, could that number actually potentially be increased if other states fail to act and we're ahead of the game on this one?
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cindy, that's a really good question. Yes, I mean, if some other state screws up in a similar way and the funds get reallocated, it could potentially be more money coming to Minnesota as states are certifying. And if other people make, I mean, we'll know 60 days after the trust effective date because that window will be closed and everyone who's not in is out permanently. So good question.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion on the Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, too, the main thing that Representative Garofalo has spoken to about why he thinks this is necessary is that he doesn't want the $47 million being taken sneakily by businesses to put charging stations at their businesses that aren't really doing as much good as some other projects might be. And the way that this trust is set up, that's impossible. You can only use up to 15% of the funds for projects like that. So even in a worst-case scenario, the trustee is not going to allow $47 million-plus dollars to go towards charging stations. So
sure.
I just want to clarify.
Representative Johnson B.
Mr. Chair, I'm just sitting here wondering, the legislature normally appropriates money and where it goes. Have some leeway, and departments have some leeway when it goes. But with this fund, particular incident with involving Volkswagen, with these funds, I'm just wondering what would happen if the person in charge of it would use it properly. Does the state improperly? Does the state then just have to break up the funds and put it back into that account?
Representative Becker Penn.
Good question. So first, this is different than an appropriation. You're very correct there. This is a privately agreed upon court settlement that the court has approved and is finalized. So it's set up as a trust and in a trustee situation. So the trustee has been appointed and the trustee has a fiduciary duty to make sure the funds are being used for their best purposes. So essentially what would happen is that the MPCA would submit documentation of what they're planning to use the funds for, and the trustee would say whether it meets the requirements. So they wouldn't approve the money. You know, the money would never get there in the first place for that kind of situation to occur.
Representative Johnson B.
Mr. Chair, I have to speak in favor of this amendment. I've seen too much over the last few years where money been given to these departments and used improperly. In more than one department, we've had what? Against the amendment. It's way too early and I haven't had enough coffee. But we've had too many departments where we allocate funds for new employees and the funds were never used for that and they're used elsewhere. So I'm concerned that if we don't have some oversight, we could be in trouble.
Representative Becker Finn.
And Representative Johnson, the oversight is the trustee. It's a very high standard. If the trustee does not follow their fiduciary duties to use the funds properly, they could be sued. They risk, in law school, my trust professor told me to never be a trustee because it's such a high standard that it's very hard to meet that standard. So it's very different than any other, you know, problems with the way an agency is deciding to spend funds, you know, when you just appropriate funds to an agency. They are locked into the things that are listed in this document. They have to use it for these funds. So really, it's good to be concerned about where funds are going, but that isn't the case here. It's settlement money, and we risk losing the $47 million+. I mean, if you want to take Representative Garofalo's word with whatever's going on and risk that, I mean, that's what you're risking, and that's what you'd be voting for, is risking that $47 million+ coming to Minnesota.
Representative Neuberger.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Real briefly, as the Vice Chair of the Jobs and Energy Committee, I take Representative Garofalo's word. He's a very smart individual, and I do support his decision in this matter. So he's not the only person in this legislature that supports this. So thank you.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion and a roll call being requested on the A7 amendment, the clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes nay.
Heinzman.
Nay.
Hansen.
Yes.
Backer.
No.
Becker-Finn.
Yes.
Bliss.
No.
Clark.
Yes.
Cornish.
No.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hoppy.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson V.
No.
Johnson C.
Yes.
Lehman.
No.
Lewick.
No.
Metza. Neuberger.
Nay.
Sundin. Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
Wagenius.
Yes.
There being 13 nays and 9 ayes, the amendment is not adopted. Next we have the A19. And I'm not sure who's Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would move the A19 amendment and ask for a roll call. Mr. Chair, and if I could have the Department of Natural Resources come down to just remind folks where the snowmobile account is right now in terms of its balance. Oh, Mr. Chair, I guess we're on the different one. A19 is the taking out the policy language. Yeah. A19 takes out Article 2. And what it does is, because Article 2 does have the majority's fee increase for state parks, that language is carried. We keep that. All of the other policy language is removed. And the reason for removing that, I think the governor was quite clear about keeping policy out of the fiscal. So this is a finance committee. Out of the 104 pages, you've got a lot of policy, and we're probably going to be adding more as the morning goes on. That should run separately. I know the governor has mentioned this before. As long as DNR is up, maybe if they would talk about the state park fees that are retained in A19.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr.
You got all that?
I'm Barb Julek, the Department of Natural Resources. So is the question on the state parks account and what's the fee?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so my understanding is the current House proposal is raising a variety of fees similar to the governor's, but at twice the rate. So for an example, the daily pass, instead of a $1 increase, is a $2 increase, and it's being tracked in the in the spreadsheet and appropriated out of the parks accounts to state park operations. But
Ms. Julie, Representative Hansen, can you help her out?
That's all I needed, because I will need her on another amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Stay tuned.
But I think it's important to note, again, going back to the bill, and just there is a lot of language in here. From buffers to VFW settlement, a lot. And the governor's been quite clear, no policy in fiscal. here's a chance to have the fiscal items move forward on their own, get it to conference, have it voted on, and get it to the governor without all the baggage of the fiscal of the policy language that is tied up with this bill. So the chamber bill is in here. The there's going to be probably CGMC, irrigators, VFW, or VW, not VFW, but VW, and a variety of other things. So I think this is an important amendment to make sure that we're having a clean bill go forward and be considered.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to speak in favor of this amendment, partially because, and we touched again on this yesterday, a lot of the sections in the policy half of the bill are things that we had never heard before and never seen language for previously. And just kind of wanted to go through what those are because there was confusion about how many different things were new. So Section 23 on the Gull Lake pilot study was not anywhere in a previous bill. Section 25, Fort Ridgely State Park liquor sale. Section 26, Fort Ridgely State Park golf carts. Section 28, Fort Ridgely State Park fees for golfers. Section 36, prescribed burn definition. All of those things we didn't hear previously. We didn't see the language until 12:51 p.m. before the hearing yesterday. Section 50 was House File 1807, which we never heard in committee. Section 62 regarding portable stands, never seen that language until 12:51 Wednesday. Section 70 was House File 256 regarding lead shot. We never heard that in committee. Section 71, elk management plan, never seen that language before. Section 83 was, again, House File 1807 regarding surplus wetland credits. We never heard that bill. Section 85 was regarding technical evaluation panel disclosure of interest in wetland banks. Never seen that language before. Sections 87 and 89 were from the original House File 888, which we hadn't discussed previously or had hearings for. Section 106, modified membership of the EQB, that language was new. Section 107, also relating to changes to the EQB, never seen that language before. Section 114, regarding silica sand in the EQB. Section 116, prescribed burns, open burning permits. Section 118, again, more about the EQB membership transition. We never previously saw that language until this Wednesday. Section 119 came from House File 1560. It's the Sand Dune State Forest Management Plan, which we heard there were testifiers that were able to make it. However, we never had a full hearing on that bill. Section 120 came from House File 332 regarding the Fort Ridgely State Park golf course. We never heard that bill previously in committee. And then Section 121 regarding Hill Annex Mine State Park and Section 122 regarding the PCA-based budget report. Those two things were also completely new as of this Wednesday. We've never seen that language. And my primary concern is that we're moving this forward without a meaningful opportunity for the public to weigh in. I'm not saying that any of these things that I just went through are necessarily good or bad. They just didn't go through the committee process and kind of have the full benefit of having go through the committee process and having the public be aware that we're doing this. You know, it's a 104-page bill that's moving very, very quickly, and I just have concerns that this many things are new and didn't have you know, we didn't have a chance to fully discuss and have public testimony. So, and you know, now we're you know, here in the basement, not on TV today for folks to know what's you know, be able to fully participate as much as they might be able to participate that way too. So, just wanted to point out all of that because there are that many new things. I counted there are 22 sections of new language that hadn't previously had a hearing. So, again, just want to speak in favor of the amendment.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for those in the audience, that look at the A19 amendment on line 1.12. So what we're doing here is deleting Article 2 and then reinserting the park fees. But The key point is it says on page 30 out of a 104-page bill. So 74 pages of policy. 74 pages, twice as much policy, more than twice as much policy as there is actual appropriation language in here. And granted, some of it does reference, but you have a lot of stuff in here that, again, the governor's been pretty clear. Policy should not be in the fiscal bills. Probably shouldn't be larger than the fiscal bills. Certainly shouldn't be twice as much as the fiscal. So I would encourage support for the A19 amendment.
Representative Cornish.
And I would just like to point out to the people in the audience that the governor doesn't run this committee.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Appreciate that. Nor does he run yours. Okay. To the A19 amendment, roll call having been requested, chair votes nay.
Heinzman.
Nay.
Hansen.
Yes.
Thacker.
No.
Becker Finn.
Yes.
Bliss.
No.
Clark.
Yes.
Cornish.
No.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hoppy.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson V.
No.
Johnson C.
Yes.
Lehman.
No.
Lueck.
No.
Metza. Neuberger.
Nay.
Sundin.
Yes.
Torkelson.
No.
Uglum.
No.
Wagenius.
Yes.
There being 13 nays and 9 ayes, the amendment is not adopted. Next amendment, members, is the A12.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is the snowmobile one.
Okay.
So
Ms. Julik is still here.
And Mr. Chair, I'd move the A12 and ask for a roll call on this one. And if Ms. Julik could maybe just remind the committee of where we are with snowmobile, the snowmobile account.
Ms. Julik.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so the current forecast, the February forecast for the snowmobile account, based on current law appropriations for fiscal 17, would have that account going into the red by about $2.2 million. We manage against that by reducing a variety of expenditures, including grant and aid programs. So it will... we will finish in the black for fiscal 17. But moving forward, it has an ongoing structural deficit of around $600,000 to $700,000 per year. And so we will continue to have a projected negative fund balance that we would need to manage against absent additional revenues in the fund moving forward.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, if members want to look at A12, we do have a change on the revenue on where it goes to actual projects, and I think Representative Eklund will maybe have some comments on that.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we brought this amendment forward, we'd had some discussion. MinUSA, Snowmobile Association, is in favor of the fee increases. But some of the, we've heard some of that stuff that they're...
I wouldn't go that far.
But we've heard from local clubs that they're concerned about the administration costs at 43%, so that's why we put them in the amendment. We put it at 25%, Mr. Chair.
So is this in the form of a bill that we've heard earlier?
Mr. Chair, that was in the governor's budget that I think you and I signed, if you may remember that, and you authored. I think what we did is we've improved it by providing more money on the ground with the provision on 3.4 that Representative Eklund mentioned.
Okay. Thank you. Well, members, I'm going to speak to this amendment. I'm going to speak against it. Raise your hand if you've ridden the snowmobile this winter.
Okay.
Good. I have. Quite a bit, actually. And I had the opportunity about a month ago to drive across Lake of the Woods up to a gathering of the Edge Rider Snowmobile Club up in the northwest angle on Lake of the Woods. And I was introduced there. It was a big fundraiser that was going on. And the person that announced me said that, you know, this is Dan Fabian, state representative. He's doing a great job in St. Paul. Someone disagree with that, maybe, but they were having a fundraiser, and one of the things that they said before they introduced me was that their reimbursement or whatever that comes from the state had been reduced, or they hadn't gotten their quarter payment or whatever it was, to the tune of roughly $5,000. There was probably 300 people standing around where I was on a beautiful winter day in the northwest angle. And members and people in the audience, there was not one person. Not one. And I spent quite a bit of time there that afternoon. There wasn't one person in that group of snowmobilers who told me, Dan, we need to raise snowmobile trail fees. Not one. In fact, they told me about some of the dissatisfaction that they have with what DNR is doing with the snowmobile account. And what did they do instead? They had a huge fundraiser, and they made up the difference themselves. And I admire them for doing that. So, with that roll call having been requested, Representative Hampson.
Mr. Chair, and, you know, I think it's interesting, again, that we each have our districts and we each have people to represent. And so when I went to the Snowmobile Association meeting, there were clubs there from Cottage Grove, clubs from my area, Invergrove Heights, and in talking with them, whenever you get two or three Minnesotans together, they may have differences of opinions. But they also said their clubs have gotten smaller. They've aged. It's harder to do the volunteer work. And it's harder to put things together, but they still want to enjoy their sport. And so there may be places where you've got the capacity, but there may be places in Minnesota where they don't have the capacity or the fundraising, and everybody uses the trails in their area. Anybody from Minnesota can use that. So I think the challenge we have as state representatives is, yes, we have our district, and we can apply our experiences from our district, but we also represent the state. And if people have that volunteer capacity, they may be able to have good trails, or it could be applied to any type of thing where we have volunteers. But to provide service throughout the state, we know, we have testimony here that this is going to go in the red quickly. So then we'll have to stop funding things. Can't operate in the red. Can't be doing some stuff. So we have to look at the statewide implications of this. And the snowmobile recreation industry is a strong manufacturing thing in your area, but it's also a tourism thing everywhere. And to encourage that tourism, we need to make sure that things are run well. I think all of us could agree on that. In this amendment, we're trying to reduce the administrative costs to make sure that projects get in the ground. And I would hope we would look at the whole of the state rather than just our actual experience. Not that that's wrong, it's just it may not be the same in terms of the capacity to do things locally.
Thank you. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, I think this is actually be tough on the low-income people. Right now, these sleds are running, what would be the price of a new sled?
You can spend anywhere from $6,500 probably up to $18,000.
And you can buy a used sled for about $400 or $500 on the net. And this would be about a fourth of the cost of your snowmobile. So I think this is a tough bill on the economically depressed people. And also, there's more people riding ATVs, just face it. And that might be a problem for the shift in the lack of revenue. But I don't think we should make it up by jacking the price up so much.
Thank you. Any further discussion to the A12? Hearing none and a roll call having been requested, the chair votes nay.
Heinzman.
Nay.
Hansen.
Yes.
Backer.
No.
Becker Finn.
Yes.
Bliss.
No.
Clark.
Yes.
Cornish.
No.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
Yes.
Green.
No.
Hoppy.
No.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Johnson V.
No.
Johnson C.
Yes.
Lehman.
No.
Lewick.
No.
Metza. Neuberger.
No.
Sundin.
Yes.
Torkelson.
No.
Uglem.
No.
Wagenius.
Yes.
There being 13 nays and 9 ayes, the amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A-16 amendment, Representative Hoppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A-16 is my amendment. I'd like to move it, and that is on page 44. We're taking out Section 25, which is the Fort Ridgely liquor provision. That was Representative Miller's. I have spoken to him, and we're going to reinsert this on the floor in the omnibus liquor bill.
Thank you, Representative Hoppy. Any further discussion to the A-16? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A-16 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next up, we have the A-13, Representative Johnson B.
I'll offer that.
Yep, that's Representative Hoppy. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to offer this. This is $30,000 that we're putting in, and we're trying to build a shooting range somewhere that Minnesota high school kids can use. And the shooting sports trap is still the fastest growing high school sport in the state, and I think it's good that more kids are interested in shooting in different competitions, and I'd like to offer the A-13 amendment because of that.
Thank you. Any discussion? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could the Department of Natural Resources come down and talk about the fund balance and the heritage sure. enhancement account?
Ms. Julie? Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I find my other fund balance. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the February forecast for the Heritage Enhancement Fund, which didn't print, is projecting a positive balance and would be able to absorb $30,000.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question on line 1.7, contract with a private entity. So is that does that go out for bid? Is that a or is that sole source contract?
Ms. Julie.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would have to follow state procurement and contracting rules.
Yep. Anything else? This is kind of continuing what we've been doing in the legislature here for some time, and I would be remiss if I didn't remember Representative David Dill and all the work that he's done. And Representative Hoppy, to your point about the fastest growing sport in the state of Minnesota, high school sport, I believe it's the fastest growing sport in the nation, but I'm not sure on that. It's a great opportunity to get kids exposed to the shooting sports and the outdoors. So, with that, all those in favor of the A-13 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next. Okay, next we have the A19, excuse me, to A5. And this was, this was House File 766 originally, and it just got left out of the bill. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could we have Pollution Control Agency testify? And I'm a little unclear. Did we hear this one? Or
yes, we did.
Okay. So, and has there been any changes to it?
No, I don't believe so, but Ms. Taylor, I'm just...
Mr. Chair, I believe there haven't been changes to this language.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd still like to have the Pollution Control Agency state their support or non-support of this amendment.
Do you have anybody here? Okay, Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chairman, this is the second part of, I believe it was House File 766.
Yep.
That was heard in committee, and we opposed that bill. So we would oppose this language. Main problem, the bigger problems with this language were, for us, were in Section 1, which is already in the omnibus bill. But this also is problematic because it adds 60 days to our permitting efficiency timeline of 150. So it's going to make it more difficult for us to have to take that extra time. And because also under current law, all we need to do is have an email from a city saying we need more time, and we give them more time. So we think it's unnecessary.
Thank you. Representative Wagin, yes?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I hear that you moved this?
I believe that I did, yes.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
Yep.
I remember, I'm going to look on lines 1.17, 1.18. And this is a permit to pollute, and it's a permit for water pollution. And what this amendment does is say that the permit application can have a copy of the draft permit at least 30 days before the public gets it. So the folks who are going to be putting a certain amount of pollutants in water get to find out what's in the permit. But the people who have to absorb the burden of the pollution don't. And I remember you're stating that, well, there might be a mistake in the permit.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. There could be. But there could also be a mistake on the other side, too. I mean, mistakes don't just always happen on one side. So I firmly oppose this. It's just another one of the examples in this bill, and this bill is just replete with these examples, where we're taking opportunities away from citizens, and that seems to be one of the big themes of this bill, that Minnesota's the citizens just don't have the opportunities to look out for what's happening to them, don't have an opportunity to comment on what's affecting them. So I'm a no vote on this, and I would urge other people to vote no.
Thank you. Well, members, this is what small cities and so forth struggle with frequently. They don't have necessarily the technical people to do these things. This is for publicly owned. Okay, these are not privately owned facilities. These are small cities all across the state of Minnesota who are looking for a little bit of common sense in what's going on. And all they are asking for is that they get a chance to look at the draft permit before it's released to the public so that they can go through it and make sure that, yes, indeed, This is what we are attempting to do. By voting for this, you're voting for small cities and larger cities all across the country of the state. Representative Wardenius.
Well, let's be a little, try to bring a little bit of balance here. My citizens drink the Mississippi River water. We're one of a million, we're part of a million people in Minnesota who drink the Mississippi River water. You're talking about waste water treatment facilities. We take our water out of the Mississippi, so does St. Paul, north, and the suburbs that use our water systems, north of the cities in Fridley. The watershed we draw from has over 200 wastewater treatment facilities in it. I worry about our citizens, our kids, having to drink somebody else's prescription. Folks who are drinking the water should have an opportunity to comment at the same time people who are putting stuff in the water.
Members, we are not taking away any public comment. There are no standards that are being relaxed or lessened in this case. We are simply saying, can we please have an opportunity to look at the draft permit before it goes public? Just so that we can go through it again to make sure that it's accomplishing what every small city struggles with, every large city struggles with. So, Representative Johnson B.
Mr. Chair, I speak in favor of this amendment. We had a good example of it yesterday when PCA was here. They gave us a letter in the morning. They had gave us a letter in the evening because they had to amend it because they made mistakes. This is an opportunity for the cities to look at the draft permit to see if there's any mistakes in it before it goes public and people start screaming and yelling. Let's get it right before it's out in the public to make sure it's done properly.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to note that I appreciate that you understand what draft means in this context, not final draft. So thank you.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering if anybody in the room could answer the question. We have I've filed several Freedom of Information requests, you know, for other reasons. Is this actually shielding municipalities or government entities from providing information that's requested? I think this runs contrary to state law already. I guess that's a rhetorical.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, even kind of with Representative Sundin's question here, things that seem simple may not be. And so I think that there's a great deal of empathy for the small cities in coming into compliance and trying to make sure particularly that they have the ability to be coming into compliance. I think Representative Wagenius brings up that each individual city's interest can have, and consequences for those interests can have a cumulative effect downstream. And the concern is all draft permits. So does, and to go to Representative Becker-Finn's point, what is a draft? Is this the actual draft, or is this every day somebody working on the permit, putting notes on post-it notes, and getting the copies together, leading to a perpetual review process where we never get to anything being completed? That I need another draft, I need the other draft, this draft is wrong. So, Representative Johnson, I understand what you're saying. We need to have things accurate. But requiring this, as with some other things in the 74 pages of policy, I think is going to have a number of unintended consequences. I know that our side of the aisle here has differences on this, but I do think it's important for this to be on the record, so I'd ask for a roll call.
Further discussion? Renew my motion on the A5. Roll call having been requested, the chair votes Aye.
Heinzman.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Becker.
Yes.
Becker Finn.
No.
Bliss.
Yes.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Yes.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
No.
Green.
Yes.
Hoppy.
Yes.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson B.
Yes.
Johnson C.
Yes.
Lehman.
Yes.
Lewick.
Yes.
Metza. Mm-hmm. Neuberger.
Aye.
Sundin.
No.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglum.
Yes.
Wagenius.
No.
There being 15 ayes and 7 nays, the A5 is adopted. Next. The A17-0287, Representative Becker.
Yeah, Chair, I move A17. What this amendment does is if a person owns a fuel oil furnace or barrel in their residence, like I do, and if that leak or challenge is caused solely by the owner, like myself, I should be responsible. It's just common sense.
Thank you. Questions, Member Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This one we did hear, correct?
Yeah, I Chair, House File 1368, Representative Hansen.
Thank you. Okay, so all those in favor of the A17, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A8, Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of folks that will speak to this amendment.
Welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ray Bowen. I'm here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. And what this amendment simply does is it eliminates some old rider language in your bill. It's language that has been eliminated several times. It seems like it's one of those old pennies that keeps coming back. And it's basically obsolete language. It was put in originally many, many years ago when we started the ambassadors program and is no longer needed. So we're requesting it be taken out.
Thank you. Discussion. Very good. All those in favor of the A8 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A8 is adopted. Next, we have before us the A17-0240.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
As I go through a comment here, I have some testifiers that will make their way down. This amendment establishes common sense procedures to ensure that MPCA's water quality regulations that impact cities are scientifically sound in design and implementation. Greater Minnesota communities are concerned that in some cases MPCA has used flawed science and implementation strategies.
Which one are we on? Which one is it?
Welcome. Please identify yourselves.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Marty Seifert. I work with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, representing 90 cities across rural Minnesota. As Representative Heinzman said, Mr. Chair, this amendment establishes a reasonable common sense procedure to ensure MPCA's water quality regulations that impact cities are scientifically sound and that their design and implementation is proper. Our residents and businesses, local governments, and the state have limited resources. As some of you know, there was a cost report that the legislature 2 years ago required It's about 500 pages long, and I don't know if any of you have looked at it, but we want to make sure that as we invest billions of dollars over the next 10 years that we're doing it properly with the best water quality possible. We have had some significant issues, as many of you know, with some of our smaller cities being able to comply with a lot of the rules. To make it very clear, Mr. Chairman, the amendment does not suspend any existing rules. It does not require legislative approval of rules. It does not infringe upon any public participation rights under Chapter 14. And the old theme of good legislation equals less litigation is really what this is about, that we want to make sure it's done right. We believe it's a moderate and common sense bipartisan proposal that should gain your support. This is Daniel Marks, who can answer any technical questions that members may have.
Questions, members. Representative Hanson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, good to see you, Marty. You know, it seems that the language about bad science or faulty science, sound science is always the science you agree with, and faulty science is the science you disagree with. But when we look at the record, it appears that there's been a lot of litigation on this, and we're kind of trying to undo where the coalition or MESCRB have not succeeded in with an administrative law judge or in the court. So the river eutrophication rulemaking, I mean, we've got a lot of activity between November of 13 and July of 14, where the ALJ denied reconsideration of rulemaking. We've got a Court of Appeals declaring river eutrophication standards valid. Looks like we've got a case currently pending. I'm concerned here, one, that we're weighing in on active cases, but also that we get into this system where we're looking for providing a result through the law rather than providing the opportunity for fair consideration of rulemaking.
Mr. Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hanson, those are valid points. We are not looking on a look-back basis with the legislation. As you know, a couple of years ago, there was the suspension of the rules and a lot of concern about that, so we dropped all of that. So this is really on a going-forward basis. Modeled after a lot of other states, progressive states like Oregon, conservative states like Utah, the variety of other states that are trying to find a way to make sure that we get it right. The cost report, in my conservative estimate, is between $8 and $11 billion. Of costs. A lot of that, a super majority of it, is aging infrastructure. Representative Backer has Breckenridge, Morris, other communities. A lot of these are probably right now, on a look back basis, 90% of the cost is aging infrastructure, probably 10% because of the new rules. On a going forward basis, we want to make sure that any new rules that are done properly. We do not believe this would have any impact on current litigation. I think some of you know Grand Marais has some issues. Cicado, Glencoe, this should not impact that, but we want to make sure on a going forward basis that A, we have a voice, B, that we get it right, and with this being the largest unfunded mandate in the history of Minnesota as far as what the other body was exploring, we just want to make sure that we measure twice and cut once when it comes with us. And the administrative law judges, Tammy Poost is the head administrative law judge. This is to give them an advisory. It is not the final dictate, but to make sure they have the tools necessary to make a proper ruling as they review these rules.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Seifert, so does this apply? I know often in these discussions we talk about phosphorus, but does this also relate to mercury or other contaminants as well?
Mr. Seifert.
I'll yield to Mr. Marks on that one.
Marks, identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Daniel Marks. I'm an environmental attorney, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities today. My understanding that the question is to where does this legislation apply? Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, the petition process that is the kind of the key component of this legislation would apply both on the front end of rulemaking and in individual permit matters. And it's designed so that it applies prior to litigation and rulemaking and prior to contested case hearing on individual permit matters. So this would touch further rules that get developed by the PCA and implementation of, of rules going forward in individual local government permits.
So it could relate to mercury, it could relate to any new standards, and this is not just phosphorus. Is that correct?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is correct. It could relate to any standard that gets implemented, any new proposed standard, or any standard as it is implemented into a new wastewater permit.
And Mr. Chair, and I would like the Pollution Control Agency to testify on this, and I think this is a significant amendment. There may be other people in the audience that also want to testify on this.
Gothier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Greta Gothier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Amendment A17-0240. This appears to be the language of House File 702. And the companion to this bill, House Senate File 695, was heard in three committees in the Senate. So I'll try to... this is this is a major bill, and I will try to condense my talking points down. I think, Mr. Chairman, this bill is about a lot more process for the agency to go through and the executive branch, and a lot of delay. And I guess I first of all have to say that it is true that Minnesota does have a big water infrastructure problem out there, around $11 billion over the next 20 years. But it is not due to water quality standards, that problem. That problem is due to aged out infrastructure that was built with federal money back in the 70s and the 80s and now needs to be replaced. So every year, Mr. Chairman, we do a survey of municipal sewage treatment plant operators, and we ask them to give us data about their equipment and their processes and so forth. And according to the most recent survey we have from 2016, so this is data from the cities, it shows that 7 to 10% of their costs that they're facing in water infrastructure are due to new rules or water quality standards. So 7 to 10% is due to what we're learning through science are new things that could be contaminating our water. 90 to 93% of their problem is because their equipment is aged out. So what they need is money to help replace that equipment, which is why the governor last year and this year is proposing $167 million in the bonding bill to not only increase funds available for loans and grants, but also to raise the caps and the amount that each city can get through grants. Because we held listening sessions all over the state, and we learned that the smallest towns need grants. So I have a handout on that. I did not bring copies, but I'm happy to give it if the committee would like to review that, or I can send you the report. Okay. So there are a number of problems with this bill. First of all, the effect of it would be our water quality advancements would grind to a halt. The MPCA would be pretty much unable to implement the Clean Water Act requirements to advance water quality standards. So water quality improvements would be sacrificed. The inability to update permits and regulations could lead to objections from EPA or even interventions. And under this bill, one dissenting opinion, one person rather, can trigger this whole process. So on line 119 of the amendment, you can see there that if a proposed action, five or more people, if it's a rulemaking, and I believe it's one person, if it's a relating to a permit, can trigger this whole new process of additional review, additional scientific review, et cetera. So I know I've said this in committee before, but I'll say it again, and that is that we don't use information that is not peer-reviewed. We only use the data and the information and the science we use is from national and international scientific journals. So it has been published and peer-reviewed. It can't be published in these journals unless it's been peer-reviewed. So we don't. We also already have a peer review process that people that we use in cases where we want to be absolutely positively sure. So this would really impact our work. And the testifiers have said the reason is because it's going to cost too much. The cost that the cities are facing is not because of our water quality improvements. It's because of their aged out infrastructure. Problem with this bill is that there's a complete removal of the deference to agency specialized knowledge. So our agency, as we've testified during the hearings, is 70% engineers, chemists, hydrologists, etc. And so that background is the basis of a system that the court uses where administrative law judges get more information in a contested case hearing, but administrative law judges are not experts, you know, in chemistry, science, hydrology, engineering, and the variety of scientific backgrounds that are necessary in order to evaluate this peer-reviewed data and put it into rules and other documents that can be used to protect our waters. So that's another problem. A third impact or whatever that would come out of this bill, I mean, it's redundant. We already have oversight of our agency decisions under Chapter 14. Anybody can challenge a decision of the commissioner. So again, we have 229 statutes that apply to my agency, and so why put another one in if it's redundant of something that's already there? I guess what I'll also say is the section starting on page 4.27 about, this is a section about unadopted rules, or so-called unadopted rules. So this is state and federal law already prohibits the enforcement of unadopted rules. Guidance is a very important tool we have to help our permittees. Mr. Chairman, a lot of times federal laws are drafted with ambiguity. And so guidance is a tool that states like Minnesota and others use to clarify the situation on ambiguous federal laws so that the people that are seeking permits understand what is required of them and that everybody has the same information. It's also an efficiency thing for us. While we love to talk to our permittees and we're happy to do that anytime, it makes sense to put kind of what we're looking for in writing so that we can save that time of a conversation and move on to the other more specific points and be more efficient. So guidance does that for us, too. So it feels like this bill is taking away one of our more important tools that we need. At the same time, on on the bottom of page 4, there's a line there, 433, saying that the decision made by the Office of Administrative Hearings has to be made without any deference to agency decision making. So deference, again, is a long-standing judicial practice that has been around for a long, long time that that is based on the fact that agencies have specific knowledge about how to how certain things work, and so therefore the courts defer to agencies. And this has been upheld time and again in the State Supreme and the State Appeals Court in various decisions that they have issued over the years. So the other change here, I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. At the risk of going taking a long time, I will just say that the testimony and the hearings we did on the Senate side in this bill were probably at least a couple, if not 3 hours worth. So I'll just wrap it up by that and saying that we very much oppose this language and this amendment.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, Chair and members, you know, being mayor of a small community, I understand the challenges that we have when we work with MPCA. I'm also a chemist. Very few people know that. And I understand my peer reviews. When we do peer reviews, it's based on other people. So it's not necessarily on data. It's based on their opinion. And why I like this bill is because we've been sacrificing common sense. I'll use Breckenridge as a good example. Breckenridge, we're supposed to put in this new facility, but we're not doing anything on North Dakota side. There's some common sense we have to look at where we get so much benefit. If there is a benefit, I question some of the data, when North Dakota isn't doing anything. So I am supporting this because what we're doing is we're going back to some common sense. This is a common sense amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is big government on steroids. The biggest beneficiary of this amendment is the legal profession. This is court after court challenge after court challenge after court challenge. So what I see is this is written by lawyers for lawyers, and it's absolutely contrary to, Mr. Chair, what your stated intention of efficiency is. This is the most inefficient thing that has ever come before this committee. Right now, there is a process that if people want to challenge rules, they can challenge what the agency's done. They go into a contested case hearing. If they have better information, the ALJ will say, the people who are challenging the agency have better information than the agency. And that's that. And if the people who are challenging don't have better information, then the agency wins. If the people who are challenging have better information, agency loses. Both of them can go to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals looks at it the same way. What is being added here is big government on steroids.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think you said it very well, Representative Wiggins. I guess one of the questions I have is, what does deference mean? They cannot give deference. Does it mean they can't listen to the opinion and give it anyway? I'm thinking that there's years and years and years of research that hopefully our administrative agencies, like the PCA, have that they're bringing to a situation. And it may be that the folks who are raising the issue, it's the first time they've had to deal with it. I just don't know what deference means. It's such a big word here, and I can see why that would make court challenge after challenge after challenge. Could we have some description of what deference legally means to the author? From the author.
Yes.
No, from the author.
Whatever.
You said from the author.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, like from the author and the agency both, I guess. I think we heard from the agency, but we could hear more from the agency. I just want to make sure we hear from the author as well.
Oh, is that the author?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, I'm not sure necessarily if you're aware of this, but Representative Swazinski's aunt passed away on, I think, Thursday. He found about it. So I was asked last night, and I'm not going to be able to supply a definition of the word, so I would ask my testifier to do so.
That's fine. I understand.
Thank you. Please re-identify yourself for the record.
Daniel Marks, attorney representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative, so I think Ms. Gauthier did a decent job of describing deference. Deference, I mean, the legal definition of deference in administrative legal proceedings is basically that the courts are required to assume that the agency is correct.
Oh, I don't think so.
And so in this case, when taking away deference, we're saying that we're no longer assuming that the agency is correct, and we are weighing the independent opinion from this peer review panel as evidence equal with the agency's evidence.
No, you're not right.
Mr. Chairman?
That's not a very technical definition. But
Mr. Chairman?
No. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, well, I see a bunch of heads shaking. I'm wondering, and it's what I'm guessing, but I do want to hear from others, including other attorneys. You're saying it's like absolute acceptance, whereas what I think I heard from the earlier description is that it's taking into consideration the information and considering it. This seems like, you know, so where did you get the idea that where is the legal basis for this being, you know, absolutely assuming that the agency is correct? I don't see that in the language, or is there some, I'm not a lawyer, so maybe some of our lawyers should tell us if we're correct about that. It seems like deference is a much more ambiguous term and consideration for, again, experience. You may have someone very experienced or inexperienced who's bringing the question, whereas we know the agency has lots of experience. So are you sure that you want to say this means absolute acceptance of the agency's position?
Mr. Marks.
No, that's not what I said, and maybe I'll attempt a more technical definition. I think that, as Ms. Gauthier described, that there is a traditional presumption in favor of agency decision-making in legal proceedings. And so what this does is it takes away the presumption in favor. And I'm not saying that deference assumes that the agency automatically assumes the agency is correct all the time, or that it is a categorical assumption. There are processes under the current deference standards where the agency has to meet certain burdens. But what this does is it takes away the presumption of agency correctness.
Representative Clark.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe we can hear from the agency and sure. Any other attorney who wants to weigh in on this. I don't know what the deference standards are. I'd be interested to hear.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark. Representative Clark, I am not an attorney. And I do not have an attorney with me from the MPCA today. However, there is another attorney here who is very knowledgeable, who I feel comfortable could speak to that if that would be all right with the committee.
So you're authorizing that attorney to speak for the agency?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
Thank you. Well, before we do that, could you just clarify what your understanding of it is from a non-lawyer standpoint, and then also, if we could hear more about those standards, I would appreciate it. But I mean, the practical application is what you have to live with, and I'm just wondering what you can tell us about that first.
Mr. Marks. Oh, I'm sorry.
Is that for me? Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I can talk about the practical application. So in the amendment, starting, you know, on line 433 where it talks without deference, and then the next line, 5.1 and 5.2, it says the agency must overcome the presumption that the agency's action may not be enforced as a rule. So what I can tell you is that there is already a statute that was enacted in 2001 by the legislature, and what that statute is about, unadopted rules, and it allows challenges to unadopted rules. And so since that was put in place in 2001, we have had two challenges made under that law, both of which were taken care of in due course without delay or problematic interference or anything. And in each case, the Office of Administrative Hearings held that the challenges were not supported, so that the challenge that what the commissioner had decided was not a rule. Wait, let me make sure I get this right. Anyway, what the basic bottom line is that the court said the challenge was not supported, and so that So what this bill does is, in addition to taking away the Chevron doctrine, which is judicial deference that we have been talking about, it also removes the presumption so that if I'm challenging the commissioner under the current law, I have to say why my challenge, why I think what the commissioner did is wrong. Under this law, the commissioner would have to say why she or he thinks what they did is not wrong. And the challenger wouldn't have to prove anything. So it's a fundamental shift, two times here, in judicial, the way the judiciary, where the judicial burden of proof is going to be or where that's residing. And those are big changes. So I have to point that out. I can't sit here and give you a definite legal definition. I don't have that training. But I do know that those are big changes and that a lot of the components of this are going to slow down our processes and make it harder for us to get our work, our clean water work, done.
Representative Ugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, the way I'm reading this, deference is basically saying that it's leveling the playing field and no one party gets an advantage in the hearing. Is that correct, Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is the correct interpretation. That is the intent behind the use of that language.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative.
Well, since I was addressed, could I just respond?
Yep, Representative Clark.
So are you saying then, I mean, what I'm concerned about is we have an agency with experience, all that experience, they cannot bring it there. They have to. They have no more authority to give information to the judge than the individual who's bringing the challenge. Do you really mean that?
Representative Ugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark. Well, I guess really in many judicial cases, and let's not get into the weeds on all of this, but everybody is treated equally here. And in the wording, as Mr. Marks has testified to, this is. Deference is no one gets an advantage here. No one is presumed to have the upper hand. Everybody is treated equally. That's the way I'm reading this. That's, I think, what Mr. Marks is talking about. And, of course, I'm not an attorney. You're not an attorney. So it's going to go to court, and then they'll decide. But thank you.
Representative Cornish.
We need an attorney to speak to this.
Mr. Chair, members, it just seems like when these folks come down here that you're visibly frustrated when you're testifying, and everybody's acting, how could they do this to us? And I was hoping you realize the frustration of all these regulations you're shoving down these people's throats, and you got your scientists, and they never know. You've got poor guy at the valves down in these treatment places, from Vernon Center to Naples, and even the Mankato is calling me complaining of the regulations and how they're applied. And they don't know when the next time you're going to read another internet study and up the regulations again and update their equipment. Is that hundreds of thousands of dollars into this equipment? And when's the next internet study going to jack the regulations up? You're going to have to replace it again. I mean, the frustration you feel here testifying is a tenth of what Joe Schmuckatella down here in Vernon Center in Philadelphia with all these regulations. And I hope you realize it goes further than your agency. The reason you're here today is because of the frustration. And it's a nationwide movement. All these regulations and the expense these people are going to. And it's hard for them to fight back. You just talked about your scientists and your best science and your state agency coming down, and these poor people that are trying to fight against these regulations. That I think anything we can do to even the playing field is a great thing, and that's why I support what we're doing here. Just testifier after testifier talk about how hard it is in these poor state agencies who seem to have all the numbers. So,
thank you. And that's a mouthful. Thank you. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to reiterate that this is a significant change to administrative law. We're talking 70 plus years of it being this way. Mm-hmm. And this amendment was posted at 6:40 p.m. yesterday. Mm-hmm. This is another, this was apparently a bill. The frustration is because they've only had notice since 6:40 p.m. yesterday that they're going to have to speak to this. my understanding is this is primarily the language from House File 702, which we can add to our list of 24 new things. It was Representative O'Driscoll bill that was introduced February 1st. 3 hours of testimony in the Senate on the same language. I mean, the frustration is the lack of a meaningful opportunity to respond and hear testimony to this. I mean, that's where my frustration is. You know, we're scheduled for 9 o'clock today. That's just barely, you know, what is that, 15 hours notice of this. So it just, this is clearly confusing. You know, I'm not going to expound on, I mean, if you follow the Supreme Court hearings, that you could spend a day talking about Chevron deference. It's a complicated, legal precedent that we're talking about. It isn't something, so I'm not going to try to give you a definition, even as an attorney, off the cuff, because I don't think that's wise. I don't think the way anyone has described it thus far is exactly right. It's not a leveling of the, that isn't what's going on here. It's a long-standing precedent, and so I just wanted to speak to the fact that this is another new thing. We could have had a real good hearing and really flesh this out and gotten into the weeds. That's our job, is to get into the weeds and figure this out. So, you know, I think I just wanted to speak to, I think that's where the frustration is the lack of time for meaningful opportunity to be heard. It isn't about us here at the table, it's about the people of Minnesota having an opportunity to know what's going on here in St. Paul.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would actually agree with Representative Cornish on that there is a movement out there. There's a nationwide movement that's been working on undoing the Chevron doctrine. So what's happening here is nothing new, happening in every state, happening nationally. Probably, and I haven't been able to listen to the Supreme Court confirmation hearings, but I think this is probably the key issue for corporate interests, is to overturn the Chevron doctrine, because the language we hear here is about agencies having that there's almost a statement or a feeling that the agencies are going to be wrong because they're the agency. Now, I, Representative Cornish, I sympathize with the folks that are working on the ground in the plant and having to deal with the consequences of these rules. I sympathize with that. I think we've been trying to find ways to help provide the infrastructure upgrades for that. But part of, I think, where I would actually sympathize with the coalition is cities over everywhere are having to squeeze the pollution reductions out of their wastewater systems, and non-point pollution continues. So they may actually be putting cleaner water back in the river. I'll use cleaner there in quotes than what may be there. So I understand all that. But the reason that the agencies are given deference is the agencies are supposed to be speaking for the people. And they are accountable to the people through the elected officials, the executive. They're tested and have to be able to justify. There's the judicial branch, and they have to deal with us as well. So I think there is a movement that's going on, clearly a well-funded movement, to undo the Chevron doctrine, to say the agencies should not have deference. The agencies have to show their knowledge, and it has to be tested. And that's what we should be expecting from the people. I would just note, I think there may be another movement that's starting, and that's a counter movement of the people that are concerned about what's happening with corporate interests, large corporate interests. And I'm not talking about small cities here. I'm talking about large corporate interests wanting that equal playing field, which then actually gets to the issue of money and who has money and who can make decisions because of the access to litigation. Mm-hmm. Again, not talking about small cities. So I'm concerned about what's going on here, not only on the process, but this is probably the most fundamental legislation that that's getting stuck in this omnibus bill. It may be the most fundamental legislation because it's another effort on looking at the Chevron doctrine. Who speaks for the people? The agency has to speak for the people, and if they're wrong, they're going to be wrong, and there's going to have to be a consequence for them. There's other pieces that come in here in trying to protect water quality. And we have to invest in the science, the independent science that we used to invest in at the colleges and universities. We have to trust those scientists that they're independent, not dependent on funding that comes from other sources. And then that science has to be used accurately, and it has to be replicated, and it has to be sound in the traditional form of it's tested. It's tested before it's applied. So I think this is a very concerning bill. I know there are people to testify, and they should be given the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chair, because this hadn't been heard. I would ask you to ask if there are people to testify, and I would ask for a roll call on the bill, on this amendment.
Sure. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I want to continue this conversation a little bit and address Representative Cornish. And I hear you when you talk about frustration with regard to regulation. I have frustration with regard to regulation, too, and it's because it's not protecting our drinking water significantly more. It needs to protect our drinking water more. So you, who do public safety, have to know that safe drinking water is public safety, too. And so as a urban representative, I am perfectly willing to pay for wastewater treatment systems outstate, even though my constituents aren't using that wastewater treatment system. I will pay for one in Representative Neuberger's district because it's just upstream from where we take our water for Minneapolis, St. Paul, and a number of suburbs. But when he puts that in, I want it to be a good one. So I'm actually willing to pay a little bit more. So he has a really good system, not just the system. So there is the other side of this, because folks do drink the water that is going into the Mississippi River. We want our citizens to be protected too. So regulation goes two ways. It is a public safety issue, and we're willing to pay. So I think there's probably more common ground here if we don't get so stuck in positions that are old and rigid, but look for solutions. The solution here would be my helping Representative Neuberger pay for a wastewater treatment system if he agrees to make it the best possible.
Sure. Representative Cornish.
We've got to get rid of this fantasy world that everybody's sending their waste to the poor little Twin Cities, and then it's clean from there to the Gulf of Mexico. You wouldn't believe what you folks here in the asphalt jungle put into the system, both in the sewer, and every time you get a major rain event, you flush the toilet in the river and bypass the system. And all of the things that come off the streets and the salt and the drugs. And so let's not pretend like poor little Minneapolis, South Minneapolis is getting all this waste from everybody else and you clear it up from here to the Gulf. I mean, we all take a part in it. I'll agree with you that much. But you've given the idea that all these folks waste water have given you the problem and then you fix it. But that's not how it goes. It's just part of the problem we all are.
I have no way implied that our wastewater treatment system is as good as it should be. No way. No way implied that. Now, I will tell you that there is nobody in Minnesota downstream from us that drinks this water.
that folks downstream from us use wells. That's just the way it is. So there are communities in other parts of Minnesota that use river water, use surface water, but not in the cities along. But that's no excuse. We should have a better wastewater treatment system. And what this bill is doing is putting a monkey wrench in our doing a better wastewater treatment system for those downstream. I don't want them to put that monkey wrench in. I want us to do a better job. I also want Representative Neuberger to do a better job. And Minnesotans are willing to pay for clean drinking water. That is crystal clear, and I think we shouldn't avoid the underlying issue here. We're willing to pay for it. That's why they passed the constitutional amendment. So, Mr. Chair, this is not an appropriate bill, as Representative Hansen, Representative Baker Finn said, to put in this legislation now. What we need to do is figure out a way to find the common ground that satisfies Representative Neuberger and satisfies the people that drink the water that's coming downstream. We could do that.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Representative Greenius kind of hit on a lot of what I wanted to hit on. I think the common thing comes back to is, yes, we're willing to pay for it. You take a look at the governor had it at his bonding bill. I know that the Republicans made a big issue that we were going to have to get a bonding bill out soon. It would have been great if we'd have seen something going in a bonding bill now that would be addressing this instead of still waiting till the end of session. But also responding to the fact is people are very concerned about their clean water. And the fact is we've got parts of our area where protections weren't taken in the past. I've had people in our area who've been very frustrated because we didn't have the protections, we didn't have the rules out there years and decades ago, and as a result, their drinking water is contaminated. Their drinking water they weren't able to use anymore, and that happens in many areas of not only in the metropolitan area, but also in outstate Minnesota. And that's why I think it's very important that we preserve the rules that we have out there, because while there's a tension, the problem that comes in, if we don't have the proper tension out there, we're liable to repeat the mistakes of the past, contaminate what we've got, and in some instances, they're not able to take the contamination out and people aren't able to use the water anymore. And I do know that we do have issues in our area. We've never denied it. I know that in our local community, before any of the stormwater goes in, that it has to go through different holding ponds. I know that whenever streets are redone in our different areas, that people are spending up to $1,000 per lot, and you usually get 4 or 5 lots out of an acre. So they're spending up to $4,000 to $5,000 an acre to have treatment on their stormwater before it leaves the area. And in many areas, they're holding it back on the landscape. So there's many things that we are doing in those in that area. But I think it also goes back to what Representative Virginius is there's a lot of bigger issues in here that we need to address that we should be taking the time to come back to in a later time to be able to adequately address all the issues and making sure that we're working in a bipartisan way to get this done, and I don't see that happening with this amendment here.
In response to Representative Hansen, if there's some people that would like to testify, I'll give you a couple of minutes each if you're interested.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Mark Tenike from the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and I won't go through the full description of our organization today again for you, but I will say that we employ lawyers and experts, and our lawyers practice in environmental and administrative law, both of which are affected by this bill. I want to just focus on some practicalities and not get into the details of the law. Some practicalities that it's a common sense bill, but I think there's some practical considerations that suggest further thinking on that. So just to, and I want to make 2 points really, that we heard a lot last night about streamlining, and there's some good discussion, some good bills introduced and discussed on streamlining. So last night was all about streamlining. Well, this morning is all about delay. The parts of this bill that would create the review panel, the parts of the bill that would switch the order in which the contested case is held with the Pollution Control Agency decisions, it's just delay. It's delay, delay, delay. So you've got a bill here, you've got an omnibus bill that speeds up on the one hand when it slows down on the other. These are the same issues. You're speeding things up with streamlining and slowing them down with this bill. I guess another aspect of that, I've practiced law on all sides. I've represented business and industry. I've represented government, and I've represented environmental organizations. And the idea that this cuts down on litigation doesn't square with my experience. This is kind of a jobs bill for lawyers. If this passes, the lawyers out there are just licking their lips. So much litigation could be generated by this bill. So that's point one. Point two, I want on the deference question, and I think we're going to hear more about how deference is defined. On the deference question, if you play around with the deference standard, I think you have to consider that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And this is why our organization had, you know, internal discussions about whether we liked the bill or not. And we've testified in the Senate on this. And I'm just going to read our testimony from there quickly. With the changes in this bill, the reviewing body would not defer to agencies, but instead would review the decisions in a way that lawyers call de novo. What perhaps wasn't considered when the bill was drafted is that what's good for the goose is good for the gander, as I said. Limiting agency deference opens up agency decisions to easier challenges. And these challenges will come from all sides. Many more agency decisions will be challenged, and as a result, government costs will increase. Organizations like ours will be better positioned to challenge more permits, more rules, and other agency decisions that don't protect the environment, and we'll win some of those challenges. To Representative Hansen's point, it does squeeze out people without money, makes it more difficult to challenge what the agency is doing. But, you know, MCA's got the resources. It won't squeeze us out. Many of these, there will be more litigation, more challenges, things that just come to a stop if this bill passes. Thank you.
Respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Again, my name is Laylee Fadahi, and I represent Friends of the Mississippi River. But I think this may be a good juncture to mention that this is actually a recent second career for me. I've spent the past 7 years as teaching and research faculty at the University of Minnesota Law School in the area of administrative law and science and environment. And it's really the complexity around these kinds of processes that is why we are concerned that this is the first time these provisions are being heard in this chamber, why usually this kind of thing would go to, say, a judiciary committee that would have more knowledge and be a better venue for some of these discussions. Mr. Marx's explanation of deference, I would take some considerable issue with, especially given the context of this bill being an administrative hearing review by an ALJ. Under the Administrative Procedures Act, ALJs must limit the scope of their review to the administrative record that documents the process and the basis by which the agency either took an action or reached its decision. And the purpose of this rule is to limit judicial activism by an administrative law judge. The law judge need only to determine whether the record, the administrative record, demonstrates that the agency acted or made a decision in accordance with the procedures that are required by the statutes set out by the legislature, that action was supported by substantial evidence, and that action was not arbitrary or capricious. And the reason for this is, you know, for more than 70 years, courts have recognized that agency rulemaking is a statutory delegation. It's a statutory delegation of legislative authority. And as a consequence, it is only appropriate for the judicial branch to make an interpretation of the agency's action insofar as to see whether it's consistent with the grant of legislative authority given to them. The legislature has not authorized administrative law judges to engage in rulemaking, which is what this bill would do, right? It would take a proposed action, give it to an ALJ, and then have them come out with a final decision that has the force of law the way a rule or a piece of legislation would. Typically, if something has the force of law and it's a delegated legislative authority, there's an Administrative Procedures Act also created by the legislature that says there has to be public notice and comment because of due process requirements. Just as legislation has to present the public with an opportunity for notice and comment, so too does rulemaking. Moving this into the context of some kind of review by an ALJ is problematic. And this really, I mean, has to do with accountability, not just to the public, but also to the legislature. This longstanding approach exists because there is a clear and direct line between the express intent of the legislature as codified in statute and the permissible scope and limits of agency rulemaking authority. But we don't have that connection between the will of a legislature and the ALJ. So the other thing I wonder here, you know, there's this concern about Chevron deference, which doesn't kick in when you're talking about an ALJ. Chevron deference would kick in when an agency decision has been challenged to a court of appeals. Court of appeals in Minnesota, the level of deference that they apply, I mean, the standard of review they use for reviewing agency decisions is whether it was arbitrary or capricious, whether it was supported by, you know, substantial evidence, all the things I listed before. When a Minnesota court reviews an ALJ's decision, the only thing it looks for is whether there was an abuse of discretion. This is a much more deferential standard than even the agency would get. And according to the Minnesota Supreme Court, the legislature can't do anything to change that level of review that the judiciary gives to administrative law judges because it's not a legislative branch of government. So, you know, overall, our some of my major concerns with this bill are that they significantly reduce public transparency and accountability. They remove a lot of incentive for the agency to engage in good record keeping. I think this is another one of these bills that, since it applies to proposed actions, were there to be agency leadership that did not act in accordance with the leadership we have now, we could have an agency that decides to think about proposed rules kind of behind closed doors so as to not trigger the possibility of something like this happening, again, to the detriment of public notice and comment. And ultimately, I really think that if the concerns of this body are to ensure that there's accountability to the legislature, this really goes against those principles. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All right. A-17 amendment.
Anybody else?
Okay. To the A-17 amendment. Roll call having been requested, the chair votes aye.
Heinzman.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Becker.
Yes.
Becker Finn.
No.
Bliss.
Yes.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
Eklund.
Yes.
Fisher.
No.
Green.
Yes.
Hoppe.
Aye.
Hornstein. Johnson B. Johnson C.
No.
Lehman.
Yes.
Lewick.
Yes.
Metza.
Yes.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Sundin.
No.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglem.
Aye.
Wagenius.
No.
There being 15 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment is adopted. Next amendment, Representative Fisher, the A3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A3, please.
Sure.
This was originally House File 2028 that we heard on stormwater permitting. This was an issue that came up through some of the communities out in our area of the Twin Cities where they're running into issues trying to move forward with reuse of stormwater ponds. And I know we talked about it quite a bit, so unless there's any questions, I'd like to move this forward and ask for a yes vote.
Thank you. Discussion? Okay. Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of the A3 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to ask for your deference for a oral amendment because we had 3 testifiers last night that came after the bill was posted and beyond the amendment time, and I would like to move an oral amendment to delete section 119 on page 101.9 ending on 102.7.
Where are we at? Page. Give me those pages again.
It'd be on page 101.
Yep.
And it's section 119. It would end on page 102.7.
Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would not grant this oral amendment. There was time to post amendments. The people that spoke against the Sand Dune State Forest Management Plan were here. The members on the other side clearly had time to put amendments in, so I would not recommend granting an oral amendment in this regard.
Thank you. Representative Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The folks who testified at 8 p.m., and the deadline for amendments, I think, was 5 yesterday, 6 yesterday. So I don't think it's an unreasonable request based on the folks that waited around all day to testify to that.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would echo what has been said by Representative Finn. And I think part of it is the fact that we had not even had a chance to hear this bill in committee, and the fact that we didn't have an opportunity to hear what some of the implications were, I think really says that we need to take this out to have a full vetting of what this bill would do.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would ask, just allow us to vote on this if we could. I think we had people at appeared here, and it was important for them to make that time. I think they made a case, and if we can vote on this, and that would be important.
Okay. So all those in favor of the oral amendment as presented, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Thank you. Okay, members, okay, I'd like to renew my motion to move House File 888 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those...
Just a closing statement?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, we have now 100 and with the stuff that's been added, we're probably up to 110 pages of proposed law, the majority of it policy rather than fiscal. There's clearly things in here beyond it, just in having the policy with the fiscal bill is one thing, but having so much bad policy is another. This is chock full of poor legislation that has significant consequence. It's been given just a drive-by hearing often where we can't fully test it out. I'm very concerned. We'll have to have further discussion on the floor on a number of these things, but this isn't what Minnesotans were voting for. I don't think. I think this is a misreading of public opinion. I think that Minnesotans value their environment. They recognize the connection between environment and tourism and their economy. Clean water and drinking water are assets that Minnesota has that other states don't. We are an envy for other states. Other states are envious of our water. So here we go again, similar to what's happening in D.C., a misreading of public opinion, interpreting election results as an opportunity to attack environmental protection. I think that there will be a reaction from the people, both at the federal level and at the state level, as they understand and recognize the consequences of these actions. I'm recommending a no vote. I have no illusion that a no vote will prevail. But I think it's important for us to indicate our opposition. We've done that through multiple amendments, and we look forward to the debate on the floor.
Thank you. So with that, I will renew my motion. Okay. Oh, we have done that already. So all those in favor of House File 888 as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The amendment, or excuse me, the bill is passed. It's off to Ways and Means. Members, that finishes our business for now. We are adjourned.